The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. It's World Daily. It's a weird one today, isn't it, my friends? There's no games.
It's so weird.
What do we do?
Don't know.
I mean,
like, withdrawal?
Drink?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Drink? Oh, the day drinking. Dub said the day drinking plan today. Was it today?
Yeah, she did.
It is today, yeah. It's have a gorgeous day just outside Montreal. I have not started. Like, what you would do if you were day drinking properly is I've got a coffee going, and you would, you know, put something in your coffee, but I haven't had the foresight to do that, so I'm just enjoying my coffee right now.
Okay,
I have a baby Guinness.
Oh, lovely!
So do I.
Good foam on that, Jimmy.
Yes.
Split Amy Walsh, G. Craig Forrest, Dan Wong, Jimmy Brennan. I'm James Sharman, joining you here, our loyal audience. It is a bit odd. There's so many games, even the last few days, right? Just the two games a day.
Mm-hmm.
Being a kind of a weird adjustment, getting a bit of life back. But I don't like that life. I want my old life back. I want the you know, morning to evening football life back. Maybe. But it is an odd one. Getting set for the quarterfinals. Should we go through the quarterfinals very quickly before we go into what happened yesterday?
Sure.
Sure.
Why not? Well, they all kick off tomorrow with one game a day.
Yeah. You say they all kick off. It's one a day until Sunday, right? Thursday, yeah, Friday, so, Saturday, Sunday. There's a match a day.
So tomorrow is France against Morocco. Mm-hmm. For all you Casablanca fans out there, you should be enjoying that one. Friday, see Spain against Belgium. Saturday, we've got two on Saturday.
Oh, it's two on Saturday.
Okay. Yeah. Wonger.
Sorry.
Norway, England, 5 o'clock Eastern. And then Argentina, Switzerland. And then Sunday, we got a day off again. And Monday. Anyway.
It's 2 day drinking?
Yeah, I guess so.
Jimmy's going to have another sleep in. Like
Bob and Jimmy out there. So that's what's coming up for you.
Left.
I know. Does that include the third place game?
Let's not talk about that one, shall we?
No? Okay.
Dumb game.
It's the worst one.
Third place game, Jesus. Okay, let's get to what happened yesterday and what happened with Argentina against Egypt. It's just incredible. Egypt up 2-0, could have been 3-0. Three goals in 13 minutes, inspired by you-know-who. Okay, I mean, it seems we're at kind of a point now where it's so hard to describe Lionel Messi. We don't talk about him enough. Right? It's like, well, why bother? You know, he's really good, we know that, so everyone knows, let's not talk about him. But let's talk about him a little bit, shall we? What are we privileged to be seeing here right now? Lionel Messi, who at 37 has evolved. His game's changed. We all know that. But he still might be the best footballer in the world. He might be the one player. If you are down a goal with 10 minutes left in the match and you could pick one player in the world to have in your team, is it still Lionel Messi? Dubs?
Good question.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
There might be better finishers, but... To look at that Argentine team, and I had thought, as much as I wanted Egypt to kind of upset things, the way, you know, Argentina ends up in the final eight is the only team from CONMEBOL, right? You, the only team from Africa will be Morocco. The rest are European. I think I saw a meme this morning, and it was, and it was Mr. Bean walking onto the airplane, and he, like, with the Swiss flag on him, and he, like, looks into coach, and it's all the eliminated teams, and then it's all the teams that had qualified in first class, and then he, like, makes fun of the guys who are already been eliminated in coach. So Switzerland find themselves there, which is great, I think. But when you look at Lionel Messi... and what he's done for this team and the way that they got there, I expected, you know, the scare versus Cabo Verde, that they'd almost learned their lesson. And then the next match, you think, okay, they're going to be all right. And then Egypt put on this masterclass. And as you said, I've watched that third goal, quote unquote, third goal, probably three or four times. It's a phenomenal run up the wing, and to have that canceled out because of a foul 120 yards away from goal is just a shame, right? So they could have been down 3-0. But to your question, Sharms, there are better finishers in the world, and they are in the quarterfinals, and Mbappe in Holland, Dembele, you might even argue Harry Kane. But for what he can do for his team and how emotional he was at the end, I think it showed what it meant to him that he realized this journey might be done. I might never play in a World Cup ever again. And for them to have that belief and to replicate it time and time again, that we are not going to be beat and we're going to do it off the back of this generational talent, maybe the best talent the game has ever seen. That's the guy that I want on my team. To not only do it, to be able to convert, to find the little bit of daylight and to find the perfect pass to pick out somebody for the first goal, to find Romero, and then to bury the second goal. And I mean, the brilliance of the third goal that he's not really involved with, he's further back, but to know being around Messi, he misses the penalty. This is maybe the only blight on his career at this point that he can't convert a pen, but to just watch him, to lead by example, but to also not ever let go of the belief that you're out of the game or that you're still in a game rather. Like, what a feeling that must be. I don't know if I've ever played on a team where that was the reality, that no matter how much time is left, you're still in this thing and you still have a shot and you still will strike fear in your opponent.
Yeah, it was amazing. Amazing. Yeah. And Messi's, even his goal, how quickly he gets that shot off. Like, he's like, all this is happening so quickly in front of him. And it just drops and he just poof.
Yeah.
Bang.
Yeah, blink of an eye.
Yeah, he's got a great reaction, doesn't he? He's so good. And you can understand as well some of the trouble that they're going through over the last two games, because when it comes to knockout, everybody wants to knock the champions off the perch. And Cape Verde looking, going, you know what, we respect you guys, but we got one shot at this, and we're going all out, and we're going to give everything that we have. Egypt have done the exact same. We respect you, but we are going all out and we're going to try to get something out of this. So every game that they're playing in knockout now is just going to get more difficult and difficult and difficult for them. And we always say it, look, good teams find a way to win. They never give up. And Argentina is like that, but I just love their composure that they play with. They just know that the tide's going to change eventually and they're going to get something. And then when they do get one, the crowd gets behind them. And then to put score three and knock Egypt out. And you felt for Egypt because I thought they put a wicked performance in. Very, very good performance. But unfortunately, you are playing against the defending world champions and some of the best players in the world. Mm. And a team that knows how to win and grind it out.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
I think it was Henri said post-match, regaining his times with Messi at Barcelona. He said, you know, when things weren't great, it's as if you could see it in his eyes, this switch in Messi's eyes. It'd be a plausible, oh, he's on now, and he'd take over a game. It reminded me a bit of that quote about Zinedine Zidane in France, and they said, when things went awry, we knew just get the ball to Zizou. He'd take care of things, right? It's that same kind of description with this guy. And they'd be doing it at his age. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you think of great athletes in any sport, right? So the creme de la creme, you got Jordan, you got Gretzky in hockey, from an individual standpoint, you got Usain Bolt. And there's others, but there aren't many others in that at that level. Messi, I think, might be through longevity surpassing them all right now to be the greatest sportsman, sports person we've ever seen in any sport. Are we at that point now with Messi? Or is this just recency bias? Is this just football bias?
Well, he's definitely past Gretzky a long, long
way. Yeah, we're globally, but within the sport, though, I'm saying. I mean, Gretzky was seen as being the greatest. He's called the greatest, right? Within that sport, okay, if Lemieux is Ronaldo, right, at this point, then Gretzky is the whole Messi conversation here, right? Mm-hmm. As far as how much better they were than everyone else has ever played the game. I think he surpassed that. Is Jordan still considered that, or was LeBron caught him up? I think basketball people tell
LeBron's nowhere near Jordan.
I think that's the perennial kind of argument, right? Is like comparing eras and who's the greatest, and you have some people on one side and some people on the other. But I think that what Jordan did and that type of quality as well is because you can have an outstanding individual who is highly skilled, who's so dominant throughout the time that they play. But it's that little bit of the intangible or a lot of the intangible where I think about Christine Sinclair. And like Tom Brady even had like a tweet where he compared like some of his comebacks and the way that he's won so many rings, and he showed up in those moments where there was nobody better to be clutch when you needed him to be clutch. So Sinky was that, playing on a team that didn't have the skill to elevate her to kind of the world standing that she needed to be in a similar conversation for the women's game or just kind of sport as a whole. But I think that's the difference, right? Because you do have individuals who will show up, who will score the goals, who will be known as that superstar power, who can be the game changer, who can bring teams to championships. But it's players in the moments that will bring everybody up. Not quite to their level because they are the zenith. They're the skill at the very top of the mountain. No one's ever going to touch them. But it takes something different to bring everybody along with you. One, in the belief that I already alluded to, but for everybody else to push against, you know, whether it's the altitude or whether it's the fatigue, mental, physical, and to deliver like the header by Enzo Fernandez. Like, yes, you have to give him all the plaudits for that to be able to convert that. And it's a textbook header. I could watch that over and over and over again. And it's a sublime cross as well. But for Messi to kind of not dictate that, but to start it off and to have everybody say, I can't possibly match what you're doing, but I'm going to try. It takes somebody a little bit different to do that. And all of the names that you just mentioned, Sharms, I don't know if they offered that to their teams. It was very insular. It was very compartmentalized. Like, I'm going to do this, but it's going to exist in isolation. Whereas Messi does it, and he imbues the squad with the belief and the quality. There's a difference there. Do you guys agree with me, or am I splitting hairs at this point?
No, absolutely, I do. Yeah, I think that the only thing different with Messi is that in the sport of football, you've got forward players that are 6'5", 6'6". You got the Haaland's, you know, profile. You got the smaller, like anybody at any size, whatever, in football can compete. And the fact that there's 250 million people playing the game at any one time, like the whole planet's playing it. And he's that far ahead of everybody else. Mm. Everything's in slow motion for him. It's just phenomenal. I can't believe it that we're seeing this guy do it at this level at his age.
Like, yeah. Well,
Isn't that part of the point? These are the guys, Jordan, Gretzky. They weren't doing it at that level at 37.
Longevity 39.
He's 39.
Yeah, 39. He's almost 40 doing it. We saw him doing it at 17 years of age. I remember that. We all probably remember that. At Barcelona, this kid with his bad hair coming out with the questionable hamstrings. Yes. Oh, he'd been on a program of steroids, you know, as a kid at Barcelona. They took him. They outbid other clubs for him because we'll take care of your muscular issues, short man, wee man. Don't worry. And they did. Right, La Masia took care of him, this kid. And here we are now from 17 to 39, and he's dominating World Cup round of 16s. and probably a quarterfinal. He's playing Switzerland now.
Yeah.
Right. So
if you took, if you took his top 200 goals of all time, they would, it would be a highlight reel that it'd just be sideways brilliant.
Mm. I'm stealing so that good. Sideways.
Like brilliant. how would you tell you like his top 10 goals of all time? How would you do that?
What goal is it? Which one? It's the one he did it's like Maradona. Remember the Maradona one from halfway line for Barcelona? Yeah.
But I feel like he's got a dozen or two dozen of those. I mean, obviously, like where he's doing it, the context within which he's scoring those types of goals would obviously put it higher up the list. But I feel like it's an embarrassment of riches when you look at this guy. He's a human highlight reel.
Yeah. You think, what has he got, 800 goals? he's the best. He's the best ever. And I always look at it and think, okay, you know, when you talk about the best players in the world, it's what you've done, how you elevate your team. And also I look and go, can you play in a past era? And I think with Michael Jordan, I think a Michael Jordan could play in this a modern day NBA. Mm. But when I look at LeBron James, could he play back then when it was kind of like prison rules, basketball, physical? And I don't think he'd be getting the points that he got in the modern day. Whereas Messi, I think Messi could play back in the day alongside of Maradona and continue to do and have the success that he has in modern day football. Because his whole career, he's had people try to smash him. Mm-hmm. And when you go back and you watch when he's 17, 19, 22, 25, people are going at him like there's no tomorrow. But his awareness, his creativity, his balance, agility, he just glides past people. Mm-hmm. And even today, you're just seeing him now still glide past people, but he's more experienced and conserves energy, and he knows where to be at the right time because he sees that buildup four times ahead of what everybody else does. And I laugh all the time when I'm watching the games because you know he's going on his left foot. And as a defender, you're going, show him to the right, keep him to the right. But this guy always finds the left. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And he's been doing it for 30 years.
Yeah, you think about that first goal versus Cabo Verde. Mm-hmm. Right, the long ball, you know it's going to Messi. Everybody knows it's going to Messi. Great little run to find that space. He shows the defender the ball because he takes the touch with the outside of his left and then buries it before anybody's really ready for it. So it's the timing and the execution and how quickly he does it. And one quick little thing, if Messi did play with Maradona, maybe we wouldn't have seen him for as long as we have because he'd have a terrible cocaine addiction.
Maybe.
Yeah,
that's almost made Maradona cooler. The massive cocaine addiction. Imagine if he was straight the whole time. How good he'd be.
I thought, you know, Christ. I always thought he was cool, but I thought he was cooler when he went to Dorados in Mexico as the head coach. And he didn't show up for preseason in the first five games. And then just one day just showed up and walked in and gave a team speech.
Coach Maradona is so cool. When he did Argentina as well, he was like just so bad at the job. But he got the job because of Maradona.
I remember we were in Beijing at the Bird's Nest, and it was me, Diana Matheson, Rian Wilkinson, Robin Gale. And we almost got killed in the crush of fans getting into that match. So it was Ronaldinho versus Messi at the Bird's Nest in Beijing. And then, so we're just buzzing. Like, we can't believe that we're here. And it was packed. And the game was phenomenal. And then the camera pans to Maradona sitting in one of the boxes. And everybody kind of went, ooh. Because the man did not look good, but he was there, and like there was the reverence for him, and everybody clapped him up, and you could see the respect, you know, that everybody afforded him. But the man looked very sweaty and very swollen, and so you do wonder if he hadn't dabbled in the drugs, how much longer he would have been with us, and maybe how much longer his career would have lasted.
Yeah, but just the legend of the man because of his background. Just grows, right? Was it 2010 World Cup? All those images of him in the box go nuts, and there's the white powder all in front of him. Yeah. I it couldn't have been cocaine. I'm sure it wasn't, but it sure as hell looked like it.
It was baby powder to stop the sweat.
It may have been. Yeah.
Bad athlete's foot.
That's the thing. Maradona was so much fun off the pitch. Messi's boring as hell off the pitch. This is purely based on his football. this icon level he's reached. You don't say, oh, that's a guy I want to hang out with. It'd be so much fun. It's all football and nothing but football.
Yeah, but all the greats are like that, Charms. Like Jordan didn't have friends. Tom Brady, he's they're all.
But at least Gordon had a gambling addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods.
At least.
Yes, Tiger Woods, he crashes cars. Yeah. You know, everybody's got something.
He crashes a few things.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the problem. He's crashing all the time.
Yeah. Crashing and crushing.
But Gretzky was boring, right? Yeah.
He's still boring.
But he's a wine connoisseur, so he's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's that.
Is he, though? Is he, Jimmy?
Is he lends his name to a lot of wine
companies. Connoisseur. Loves his vino. Caracal.
Jordan.
But yeah, I mean, back to Messi. I mean, again, we do have to now and again give him some minutes because it's easy to dismiss him because, we just expect this from him. But they were down 2-0 in this match. They could have
got some help. And got some help.
So let's talk about what could have been and maybe should have been the 3-0 goal. Yeah. There was a goal ruled off, amazing counterattack, ruled off because there was a foul literally at the goal line at the other end of the pitch, which was a foul. But VAR went all the way back to rule that goal out.
Back to the future, Sharms. It's Marty McFly was there. Doc Brown.
Well, I mean, it was only 13 seconds, apparently. According to one of the listeners and commenters, it was only 13 seconds between that happening and the goal happening. That was a counter. Just, to me, that's not the point. That's not what VAR's there for. It's a clear and obvious mistake, obviously, it should be there for. And for a call to be called back that far down the pitch, to me, that's ridiculous. Whether it's one phase or two phases from the goal, I don't care. It's too much. Am I wrong here?
No, I would agree with that. I think it's bordering on re-refereeing. And I thought that's what they were not going to do. Like if the referee doesn't see that foul, he's watching it, and he doesn't give it, it's obviously not clear and obvious. I don't think they should be going back and re-refereeing the game. I think it's become... how far do you go back?
Now they're opening it up that you can go as far back as you like.
Yeah, but it's
Toot and Common? Like we're going back to that far? Like
it's supposed to be part of the play. Where it initiates and where it finishes.
Right.
So that is in there where it happens, then the progression is going forward now. And so then you go back to the start of that play.
So should Jimmy, do you think they should though? I mean, okay, if that's the rule, okay, fair enough. But should that not be revisited?
No, I don't agree with it. I don't agree with it at all. No. I just think that the only part that you should review is that moment. Because the rest is past. That's finished. Now it's okay, the time of the incident, what happened? Okay, perfect. But going back, you know, 10, 20, 15 seconds. That's too much time.
I mean, you could argue that Egypt had a couple of things too that they could have looked at. I mean, if you're going to go that close and say, oh, did he step on his little toe? Oh, he might have. Salah was clipped in the box. He might have been going down, but what are we talking about here? It's the same stuff. Like, they didn't look at that.
Exactly. And just so everybody knows, who you're listening to is former FIFA color man, Craig Forrest.
Former.
Yeah, thanks, Wonger. I'm trying to stay under the radar here.
You're doing great, brother. You did amazing out there.
Yeah. Thanks. See, you're like the VAR, the past. Not the present anymore.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the ruling, like you're looking at where the play begins and the progression starts towards the other goal. Like that is probably the extreme of where you're looking at it, right? Where you're quite literally starting at your own goal line. Like that's a bit of a stretch for me because it's the brilliant run up the right wing and then it's the pass central. So you could argue that that's part of the phase or that's one phase going forward there and then hard stop. The pass central could be another part where you clip it and then the pass into space for the finish could be really a third phase if you're breaking down that entire play. yes, it's one action moving progressively towards the goal. But there were other moments there where potentially the ball could have been lost. They could have been dispossessed. It's not like there was one march up the field off, like on somebody's foot.
Just think, but that's part of the flow, right? That's the progression. So that's all one phase, because that momentum, everything going forward. That's, if I pass it to you and you pass it to Wonger, that's our progression, our phase. That's all one moment of the match. Now, if we lose possession, it goes the other way. Then that's transition. That's another, and we win it back. Then that's almost like a second phase of us in possession.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm not disputing that. But I just think if you're looking at offside, when the ball goes to that first player that receives it, I forget who it is for Egypt. At that point, he receives it centrally. The line is set at that point relative to where the ball is, right? Mm-hmm. And then when it comes from the right winger, then there's a different line that's set. So offside is able to break down that entire phase of possession, which is the attacking transition, into little segments. So I know I'm being a bit of a pedant here, but I just think I feel really hard done by for Egypt. And clearly they feel that it was unjust, right? With all of the calls that seem to go against them. And if you are looking at VAR objectively and how it's been used, or I guess it's not really objectively, it's subjectively, that the smaller nations are not getting a lot of these calls.
Yeah.
Which
they're not getting a lot of these
we
calls.
You mentioned Gretzky and you mentioned Jordan. They all got the calls. Sadly, yeah. That's just the human element of sports. Egypt have made a statement about what happened. We look better than the reigning champions, better than everything. But the result was influenced by internal factors on the pitch and external factors off it. Perhaps they wanted to keep the world champion in the competition. Perhaps they wanted Messi to stay in the running. In football, there are sometimes external factors that go beyond the technical aspects. The world champion receives support at every level. Someone's getting a fine. A big old fine from FIFA. That's Hassan. Who was that? That was it.
Yeah, but he's also getting a 6-year contract with Egypt.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a Sam Hassan.
Yeah. Gianni should be getting fined as well, because when Messi misses his pen, there's images of him with his head in his hands. And then post game, he's like, I was living the emotions with Argentina. Like, what are you doing?
Well, you want to talk about Gianni?
I really don't.
He's not doing himself any favors, is he?
he's having a shocker.
Yeah.
You know, that was a howler. That was a ball through your hands all week. Like, my God. I think he's got too much support to threaten his job. But in any other business, this guy is being booted.
Mm-hmm. Wow. To talk about the football just for a second again, Forrest, how about Shabir and a couple of the saves that he made for Egypt?
Yeah, outstanding. Really good. Really good. Even the messy one, he nearly got too, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Tipped it onto the bar.
Yeah.
Sharms, going to your match day yesterday, I was all confused. I didn't realize that, like, they've been changing the start time of these matches in the afternoon.
I also got screwed by that.
Yeah, so the only reason, like, I thought it was a 4 o'clock start, and then, like, I was happy that I got to watch the comeback, but it was only because of our dark web and you go Egypt. And that was the only reason I watched the match, because I was like doing things, working. And the next thing I know is like, oh good. Now I'm watching this comeback, but it was spectacular comeback, but I did feel Egypt. And I'm going to ask Sharms this question just because I'm not sure how has VAR been a blight so far on this World Cup.
Because you're a watcher. It's been a blight ever since I said it hasn't been a blight about a week ago.
That's right.
Mm. Right? It was doing pretty well for a long time. It as seemed, was the refereeing. We weren't talking about it. There wasn't too much controversy. And then, boom!
But you're noticing this pre-knockout, right? Oh, it's fine.
Yeah, because they weren't making the calls. They weren't. It seems the whistles are put away for the group phase.
Yes.
And now they've come back out again. And how can we mess with this wonderful game of ours and the biggest moments, maybe because they're the biggest moments and they feel they have to get it exactly right.
Are you guys finding too that the referees in play for potential penalties are basically passing the buck?
Oh yeah.
They're like, I'm not calling it. I mean, yesterday, then that's the Swiss Columbia game. There's a couple that's like, oh, okay, just doesn't want to know. And he's passing it to the bar.
But they'll take a look at it.
Under pressure.
Yeah, exactly. You hear the commentators say, well, it's being checked. Mm-hmm. Hasn't made the call, but they'll have a look at that. That's the commentator's favorite saying. So they'll have a look at that.
The American ref the other day, remember? He missed an entire, like, it was a penalty. And
in
he
what
missed,
match, Wonger?
Pardon me?
In which match?
God.
Brazil, Norway.
Brazil, yeah, the Swiss. Brazil match.
Ismail Elfaf.
Yeah, thank you.
He does MLS games. He struggled big time, and thank God there was
struggled.
VAR. He needed VAR.
There was a trip in the box. It was the Belgian player. Totally, like, just took legs Norwegian. Out. Yep. Oh, sorry. But either way. I get them confused, you know.
Oh, they're all white. They look
the same. Yeah, that's right. Oh, they look alike to me.
Good one. You're so predictable.
And Footy Prime canceled.
Thank you. But when you see a ref who's missing a call and almost waiting for VAR to correct them, that, to Sharms's point, all of a sudden you're re-refereeing, as Craig had mentioned earlier. And I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah. Do you know what the problem with that too? And I'm just watching that game and watching him closely, because you could see he was losing the game. He was losing a grip of it. Mm. And on that play, when the player goes down, he is in perfect sight of it. Perfect sight. And he's probably only maybe 10, 15 yards away. Doesn't call the foul. It goes to VAR. They look at it and go, no, that's a pen. So as players, you know what it's like. When a referee doesn't see that and then VAR gets it, you're looking at him and his credibility starts going out the window a little bit, because you're going, how did you not see that? And you got to go upstairs and you're that close to the play. And then there was a couple of more incidents as well. And it started getting a little bit heated. And you could just see he was in total panic mode, because the occasion did get the better of him.
You're right. And the players sense that, right, Jimmy?
Yeah, of course. So in those situations, VAR is very helpful. Very helpful, because then they can kind of get a grip of the game a little bit.
I guess my question then, Jimmy, would is he not taking the having agency because of VAR, though? Do you know what I mean? Like, because he can fall back on VAR. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's come to for these referees, instead of, hey, this is my match, I have agency over the match, I am the referee, my call stands, that's it? And now these guys are second guessing themselves, they're hesitating, it's cryptic in their brains, they don't know whether to call something out immediately, because VAR is big brother, it's George Orwell, you know, we're big brothering right now.
I think sometimes when you look at it, the game is so fast as well, and the movement's so quick. The players are, I mean, at times I'm watching games going, this is rapid. Like, how are they going to sustain this? And they do sustain it for 90 odd minutes. And I think sometimes the plays do become a little bit quick, and the referees are kind of guessing, they're second guessing themselves. And you can hear them talking all the time. Even when you go back to a lot of the replays, where, you know, the camera's on the chest and you can hear them talking. Mm-hmm. They're talking all the time, like, and they're more or less saying, was that foul? Did you see that? And so it's on the fly. But I think, you know, the good referees are in good decisions and they're brave enough to make calls. And I think as a referee, you have to be brave. Make the call. If you get it wrong, okay, go upstairs. Yep, my fault. But to not call anything and be in situations where you're going, that's a blatant foul. And everybody in TV can see it. Everybody in the stadium can see it. But you're kind of hesitant on that situation. Mm. Well, you shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Because the good referees will make a decision.
Have we ever gotten to a point with IFAB and in the way that we're constantly, or FIFA and IFAB hand in hand, are reevaluating the rules and trying to make the game better, right? So more interference by technology and VAR is kind of where we're at now. to try to catch up with the speed of the game to ensure that you're there to police it properly. Have we ever gotten to a point where they considered having two referees on pitch?
Good point. It's been discussed before, but I think with VAR, they don't need to, or they don't think they need to. But
would that not be better? That.
Yeah, absolutely. Give them each a half.
Yeah, right? I do, because you watch Erling Haaland or Mbappe, Dembele, Mo Salah. These guys, when they break, how fast they are! Mm-hmm. No, your referees aren't keeping up with that guy when they open up their legs and they're gone. There's
Michael
no
Oliver
chance.
Can't catch Erling Haaland.
There's no way. So, to Dubs's point, if they did have a referee in the other half, and that's his half that he controls, then you're already in a position for when these guys are in full flight going towards goal, then you got someone there keeping up with it.
Mm-hmm. Hockey did it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And did you guys see, it's a socials clip because it's only about 20 seconds, but it's Erling Haaland taking inspiration by his 39-year-old counterpart in Lionel Messi. And it's the preamble before the opening goal where he absolutely owns Gabriel, right? Like that battle from the Premier League between the two of them, between City and Arsenal bleeds into the international game, and he's walking, looks like he's going for a coffee, looks like he's just on the training ground. He's not involved in the play at all. And then all of a sudden, there's just this turn of pace, this burst of speed, and it's devastating. Just in a couple of steps, the way he's up to top speed, and it's so aggressive and it's so primal almost, and he's over the top of the ball and it's in the back of the net in a blink of an eye. And it's so stunning to see. So to Jimmy's point, I mean, and that was over 15 yards, maybe, like he's walking and he's getting into the 18-yard box and the turn of pace is over 5 or 6 yards. But that is happening in transition, where it would be impossible for even the best conditioned referee to keep up with these physical specimens who are able to football as well.
I mean, we've seen speedy players before, right? And that's nothing new. But Haaland's a different creature entirely. A guy that size to be able to do it. And like you said, that raw power. What do you call it, Dubs? You use a great word for
primal.
Yeah. Imagine like 3,000 Vikings like him coming towards the shore.
Yeah, thank God they're not. Thank God there's some girth to some of
the
those
world
guys.
Right now.
Stop seeing girth.
Yeah, but look at Norway isn't like in charge of the world. How?
You stop saying primal.
Look how big they are, though. Their team is massive.
Yeah, they are.
They are big boys. Monsters.
Yeah, since Bosnia got knocked out, I think they're the biggest, most robust physical team left, right?
Yeah. So, okay, let's quickly go through the quarterfinals. England, Norway. At least the English players know all about Erling Haaland, all about Martin Odegaard. They won't be surprised by his turn of pace, which and England are the favorites in this match, Craig. What was your initial thoughts for this one?
Well, I would agree with that they would be favorites, England, for sure. But when you have that X factor up top, I mean, what he did, Nora Haaland in the last game is just incredible. I'm telling you, if Canada had Haaland in the team, we'd be in the semifinals. I would just, hands down. We dominated so many games and we can't freaking score.
Yeah.
We got to the last 16. Yay, great. But come on. Like, fuck me. Put the ball in the net.
And mark it. 37-24. I got it.
Would you rather Haaland for Canada or Mbappe?
Oh boy!
You choose one.
I'll take either one of them.
No kidding.
Both of the both.
We have strong left-sided players. We don't need Mbappe.
Yeah, we need somebody on the end of crosses.
Yeah, exactly.
We had 50,000 corners. We had 50,000 corners. Couldn't even get it. Like nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going Haaland.
Yeah, me as well, Haaland.
Really? Mm-hmm. But he only has 3 touches per game.
That's the reality of Canada, though. I think that he slots in much better.
He's only had 3 touches, but got 7 goals.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
He's 7 for 9 or whatever.
I want that kind of math in my life.
Numbers. Yeah. Hey, it's not like Haaland does it against like bad players. I mean, he's in the Premier League, just demolishing the best defenders in the world week in, week out.
Yeah.
He's the one guy, right? This World Cup, that's his station has risen more than anyone, I think. We know Haaland. Yeah. Fans of football know all about that he's a superstar to us, but to the world he hasn't been. Now he is. Like I said before, my sister-in-law in Red Deer, who doesn't know the shape of football, asked me about Haaland last week. That tells me it's the Red Deer factor. To any listeners in Red Deer who love football, I apologize. I know there's some of you out there, but not very many. The Red Deer scale, they it's now realize who Erling Haaland like is.
And also and anyone who's listening.
He's a great role model. He's a great role
yeah,
model.
Yeah, he is. Mm-hmm. What a hilarious guy, fun guy. His yeah. YouTube channel is one that's worth actually watching because it's really funny and real. And his fiance plays off him really well. Yeah.
And respectful. He's just fun.
Former footballer yeah. herself.
Oh, that's right. She is. Yeah. Footballing mm-hmm. fan. Okay. When they have kids, talk about a stud farm. Just yeah. have those two. Oh,
can you please?
Just have those two spitting out kids.
Yeah. Yeah. You might make some money of you, the old sperm bank.
God.
Sperm bank. Jesus, it'd be
what an idea.
Warehouse. You need a warehouse.
Yeah. You won't be on the front of GQ, vial. But you'll be a good footballer.
Yeah, exactly. Give him the choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He'll fill up a cup stack.
You need a beaker. Hey, Wonga, I've got to get this line in quickly because you'll appreciate this. Back to your Orwellian theme.
Yeah.
You know that the official language of FIFA is English, even though it's based in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. Actually, they've changed that. It's now Newspeak.
It is Newspeak.
Yeah, that's the new official language of those who read 1984 will understand that. I think it was funny.
I did back in high school, but I don't remember.
It's a great, it's fantastic, and it's very apt in these.
And if you hate rats, if you hate rats now, read that book and you'll really hate rats.
Yes. Give it a whirl. It's a great story.
Hey, anyway. I got to throw a shout out. Happy birthday to my daughter, Chloe, 20 years old today.
Oh, the big 20.
Wow. Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. So I was just thinking about Messi, how he was 17 when he started playing, and he's, what do you say, 39 now?
39. He turned 39 during the tournament, yeah.
Yeah, so that's 22 years. I've been married. I've had two children with my ex and been divorced. Worked on Footy Prime for 7 years, and this guy is still playing soccer. Like, the amount of life that this guy has gotten out, he's squeezing every ounce out of that toothpaste of soccer for him, right? Like, he is squeezing that out.
Enough of this sperm bank. Enough.
The reference. Okay.
Just think, Chloe was 13 when we started this podcast. Oh, God, that ages you, right?
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow. Okay, back to the quarterfinals. So England, Norway, we had a brief chat. Now we have to get Canada as well. So we'll race through these very quickly. I have to get my little app here and all the games here. Where are we? What day is today? Thursday? Wednesday, right?
Yep. Wednesday.
Okay, so there's no games. Sorry. Bear with me here. I'm way off here. Today there's no games. Tomorrow, there we go. France, Morocco tomorrow. Sorry, there you go. Mm-hmm. France, Morocco. Quickly, Dubs, a thought on that one.
Oh, well, I think that maybe on this podcast that I've seen some comments on YouTube that we didn't give Canada enough credit for the way that they kept Morocco at bay, that they were aggressive, they were front-footed, and this is Morocco coming off of 120 minutes and penalties of football versus the Dutch. And then just we couldn't capitalize, and then Morocco, their professionalism, their quality emerged, and they were able to get through, but they've been on some rest now. But I mean, France, right? I think you saw them keep their composure versus Paraguay. They put in to see if they could get Elise's yellow card suspended, right? Because everybody's playing that game now. Why not?
You need the president.
Yeah. Macron, do your job.
Make a call.
Yeah, exactly. Call's happening. Likely not. He's probably disgusted by everything, right? I think as is the rest of the world. But I think this is going to be a good one. I think you expect France to to roll, just given the menace, the threat across that front line and the quality up and down that roster. But I think this is one that might go the distance. This one might go to extra time. And I think France just pips them before pens.
Yeah, I see a long one here as well. I see this could be a shocker for sure. Friday, Jimmy, Spain, Belgium. Spain yet to concede a goal at this World Cup.
Yeah, Belgium. Spain all day long. All day long. I just think they're too good. They're too good. Rodri and Pedri in the middle of the park are absolutely ridiculous. Olmo, he's been on fire at the moment. Yamal's been great to watch. I mean, just all around. I love the way that they play. Play a great brand of football. They're hitting their stride right now. Like we said, you know, group stages or whatever, just get out of it. When it becomes knockout football, you start seeing the big dogs, and now you're seeing them roll. I think with France, I think France will be done within 90 minutes. I think they're too good. They're stepping up to the plate now. They know what's at stake. I think Spain's going to win that one in 90 minutes. Those are two great sides. England, that's the one that I've got the big question about. Is you're playing against the Norwegian side, and a lot of those guys are very familiar with English football. It's going to be a good match, toe to toe. Who's gonna be in the back line that's going to go up against Holland? Are they going to put Dan Burn in there, 6'7" center back that can muscle and can fight him because he's used to it? It's going to be interesting to see tactically what they're going to do.
I think we see Dan Burn because I think there was a great I think socials post that I shared with you guys about Dan Burn and getting that call from Thomas Tuchel and just how thrilled he was just to be a part of this English squad and what he lent the team, you know, like almost through three different matches where they started composed, good build up, good possession. Then it was like lethal in transition. And then it was, we got a bunker in, substitutions were made, back five, and then they dealt with the onslaught of the crosses. And that was led by Dan Burn.
Yeah.
And then you saw like the one blight versus Burn is that he leapt over those ad boards being all of 6'7" and then poor Jordan Henderson thought he could do the same thing and he fell on his face and broke his wrist. So he led a teammate astray there, but that's the only knock against him. So I think he's shown Tuchel what he can lend if they have to do something slightly different, but I don't see him starting, right?
No, I mean, Haaland, like I said, it's more than just beef. He's mobile.
He's
immobile.
He's great in the air. Very good in the air, and they put a lot of crosses into that box.
Yeah, they are direct. Yeah.
And because even on set pieces, they're huge. And that's why every team that's playing against them, they're trying not to foul around their box because they know how dangerous these guys are. So you need height. But whether he starts, I don't know. But I'm just thinking about the physicality. Every time they play Man City and Newcastle, Dan Burn and him have a wicked battle.
Yeah.
If they're searching for a goal late and they get direct, which is what Norway will do, then that's the time to bring him on, like we saw. Yeah. You think last time out, right?
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a fabulous game.
About the Belgium Spain game is that if Belgium, who hasn't played particularly well until the last game against the Americans, if they play something like that against Spain, they're on to something. Yeah. They were absolutely brilliant. Right out of the gates, because their problem has been slow starts, get going in the halftime.
Yeah.
They were just on the front foot and maybe thinking they were, you know, playing with house money because they were so lucky against Senegal, because that didn't look likely. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were terrible. If they play like that, they're going to get pounded. But if they play like they did against the Americans. And another thing to take into consideration, I mean, I just traveled to Seattle from Toronto after doing games, but these players have to be absolutely knackered. Like, the longevity of this tournament, it just goes on and on and on. And to keep the players interested and, you know, busy doing other things when you're off the field is really difficult. I know that a lot of families are there. I mean, Belgium's got their families there, and that's really, really important to have that downtime. But balancing tournament football is not easy. And it gets to a stage like, who you're grinding it out now. Now you're in the quarterfinals. It's like, oh, okay, like, you know, so I think important for all these teams is using their squads and the teams that have managed their squads really well, because you need all 26, or maybe not 26, but 23, 24 players. And if you're using them well, I mean, from the Belgians' point of view, De Bruyne, he got a chance to rest, didn't play at all. Onana got injured. That's not great, but they got players that can step in.
Mm-hmm.
But if they use their entire squad, they're going to manage their tournament much better and look better when they get to these stages. So that's something to think about.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, sorry,
go ahead, go ahead.
I was just about Forrest calling that match, the USA versus Belgium. Well, you were brilliant, by the way. It was so great to hear you on the call. Again, you did a fabulous job across the tournament. But the wings and the way that they went with Trossard, who's been outstanding across the tournament. But is it Luca Bacchio on the right-hand side? I was so impressed with how he played and how front-footed he was and direct and physical. And the U.S. didn't have an answer for him.
No, they did. They crushed them in the wide positions. They knew the Americans were great, good on the wide positions, and they didn't want to get the ball into them. And whenever they did, they were on them. They were just like a bad rash, just all over them. And then as soon as they got possession, they just fan out. And then it was like, oh, they seem to have acres of space and were able to use their wide players. So, yeah, they were both good going forward, the Belgian players, but also defensively.
Yeah.
Daniel was excellent. To Cantelaire up top, that was the best performance he's had. And if he starts to score, you're on to something, because Lukaku obviously can't go. He only played 65 minutes all season long. But talk about a man that when you bring him on, it's just like that finish. He's been sitting in the plucked up chicken position on the bench for now. You know, when you bring him on and he gets the ball, he's just like, and he finds the bottom corner 4-1 doing the Trump dance. Like, what's going on here? Like, incredible finisher, 93 international goals. It's just insane for a guy that has hardly played, and you wouldn't hardly know it, other than the fact that he's quite large. And
but this De Ketelaere guy, I mean, again, he's really, no one knew much about him outside of the Belgium fan base before this World Cup, and he steps in there, starting matches, scores a brace, looks really good, looks very comfortable out there, doesn't he? But that being said, Spain, I mean, Spain is probably the one team in this tournament that can smash a team 1-0, right? Because they don't score many goals, generally speaking, but they find a way, like all-encompassing results, and they win 1-0. It's what Spain do. They always have.
Yeah, but Marino and his influence on that goal, takes the free kick very, very quickly. Torres slides him in, just beautifully weighted ball, and then before you know it, like, Portugal hadn't even reacted. And it was in the back of the net. And that's all they need, to Jimmy's point, is that they're rounding into form. They're so dominant. And they're, even though it was a boring contest to watch, they're able to get the upper hand when it counts.
Lots to get to, of course, today's show. We haven't even touched Canada yet, really. But Wunger?
This is World Cup Watch Canada. It's Game On with Tim's. Brought to you by Tim Hortons.
All right. So it was really almost syrupy.
I don't know what to do with that.
I feel a bit. I need a cold shower actually now. That's what I need.
I need to smoke a cigarette.
Yeah. Wow. We haven't got much time here, but listen, we'll get to more and more Canada the next months, years. But we talk about experimentation and Jesse Marsh and what needs to happen moving forward. You've got a couple of windows left of this year, Nations League games coming up, some big games actually as well, so you can't experiment too much. But very quickly, what would you like to see Jesse Marsh experiment with in the next window of matches, be it formations, be it selections, be it his attire, whatever you want? What should Jesse Marsh experiment with? Jimmy, do you have one in particular that jumps out?
Formations, I'd like to see him change it up a little bit. And use players in different positions. The big one for me, like I said before, I'd like to see David up top, Flores underneath him. Maybe have three midfielders in the middle of the park, one attacking midfielder that can make something happen. And I just think being able to adjust the matches where it dictates you have to change the formation to get the edge and get advantage in a match. And I think at times we don't really do that. Do we change the formation?
But we're not seeing Flores, obviously, for a while. He won't be available for the next window. Is there someone else in that team that, or maybe not in the team, maybe on the outskirts looking in, that could slip into that position, do you know? I mean, do you think? I mean, I can't think of...
No, because, I mean, look, over the next couple of years, you hope with the under-23s, we got some good young players coming through the system. And I would like to see some of the young guys coming through that are going to be the next, those superstars that are, you know, maybe 17, 18, 19 years old and let them have a shot as well, especially coming into some of these games. It's an opportunity, right? It's preparation for the next, well, you got Nations League, then you got Gold Cup next year, and then you're going back into qualifying now. So now it's like, okay, we got a core group of players that are going to be here for the next cycle. So what's the next young groups that's coming through and get them some experience?
July 26th, CONCACAF Championship, right? See some kids in that action. It'd be really interesting. Craig, any experimentation you want to see in the near future?
I don't know. Maybe play one up top. Promise David. Flores sitting as the number 10 sitting behind him.
When he gets back.
I think Jonathan David hasn't done enough for me. Like,
so he's got only a spot back? Is what you're saying?
Well, you better pick it up because against the better teams, he's not showing up.
Mm-hmm. Dubs?
Yeah, to not sound like a broken record, I think it's about development. It's about looking at the pipeline, and Jesse Marsh is going to be involved in the U20 team. We talked about that yesterday, and aligning all of those kind of pillars together so that you're really bringing players up who understand how to play within the system. I don't see it really changing a whole lot, but I think three midfielders and David up top makes a lot of sense. I think he needs to go back and he needs to be a striker, because a lot, like I've seen some comments where I'm saying, you know, we need to hold him to account. He did not have a very good performance in this World Cup. If you're like, well, he's playing at best a false nine. He's an attacking midfielder. So you're evaluating him as a striker when he's not even playing as a forward. So, you know, Ismail Kone, I've already talked about the fact that obviously he's going to be out for a bit, but projecting forward, you know, if you're playing three in the midfield, you have a double pivot, you're playing more of a 4-2-3-1, can you have an Ismail Kone kind of playing in that 10 hole? But I mean, I think we do have players in the system that will come out. Do we have that creative force who can really pull the strings on the attack? And we still have the threat on the wings, and you have somebody like David or Promise David who can be a prolific scorer. Then I think you really elevate this program, because I think right now we've hit our self-imposed ceiling if we're going to play our best attacker as a midfielder.
It's a real shame that we won't be seeing Kone or Flores for a while. Probably not this year. Right? So all the experimentation you want to try, that's great, but it's without two guys that would fit into that 10. That's really frustrating if you're Jesse Marsh right now. There's only so much you can do, but maybe it's a chance to try some players. But Nations League, right? They're important matches. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, yeah, Jeevan Boswell, right? Like, I think
the young kid.
Coming up, he has those attributes, right? But can he be developed and kind of shepherded on to be able to compete at the international level in that position?
Well, Jeevan Bedwell, or as Asa calls him, the BC Messi.
He does. TM.
He calls Ralph Prizzo the BC Maldini. Wonga, you were trying to jump.
I was just going
to
say, you were talking about we're not going to see Kone, and I know Dubs is good with healing injuries. So how long is that tibia fibula? Like, how long does that take to heal compared to an ACL, which I'm pretty familiar with?
I think it's less time, but it's still a pretty severe injury. I think it's 5 to 6 months. But I mean, he looked. Sorry.
Sorry. Tejan was, I think, 6 months, right? I believe it was 6 months. But Bombido was longer than that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you can't foresee the complications, right? Mm-hmm. That might result. But if it heals properly, we don't know if he has any hardware in there, or do we? Does he have pins or screws? To make sure that the bones are healing properly, that's another surgery to remove the hardware, and then you continue along your kind of trajectory or your path towards full health or full fitness. And then it's about how you get on. Like, you looked at him celebrating in the locker room after they beat South Africa. People were like, "What's happening? He's not, doesn't have any crutches." So he was pretty mobile, right? For a guy, the injury just happened in the last couple of weeks. So hopefully,
wasn't that painful to watch? Wasn't it like, "Hey, can you just put the crutches back on?"
Yeah. Well, it's the adrenaline. The medical staff is like, "Watch it," because I'm sure he paid for it the next day for the pain that he was feeling.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, we're out of time. From stud farms to sperm banks to hardware. We covered over on Footy Prime. Hope you enjoyed that. We have make sure you follow us on all our platforms, leave us comments and 5-star reviews, and check out our Patreon and our shop on wearefootyprime.com. Until next time, cheers for watching.
Got MGM. Make it legendary.
Make it legendary. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Legendary.
Make sure you rigidly adhere to Footy Prime because we're on the rise.
Sponsored by Viagra.
Definitely open to that.